One of the more popular sitcoms of the 1980s was Family Ties. Some of you may recall this show about the Keaton family. Like every good family-based sitcom, it had to have its own particular hook. And in this show, it was that mom and dad were 60s hippies who'd grown up to become suburban liberals. And they had a brood of kids, the eldest of whom, Alex, was an unreconstructed Reaganite. And so there was lots of humor that unfolded around the tension between mom and dad and Alex. In one episode, Alex came home to discover that his little brother had returned home from preschool, having been exposed to some very pernicious teachings. Apparently, the children were being taught to share. And this, of course, might lead down the road to something awful like socialism. So Alex was going to nip this in the bud. And he made a little sign that he tacked to the front of his brother's clothing, which he had him wear when he brought him to school the next day. And the sign declared, "I know what's mine." Now, anybody here who has been around little children, or indeed can remember when they were a little child, knows that even the most generous and big-hearted kid doesn't need a sign to say, "I know what's mine." Because all too often, kids live life by the rubric, "What's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine." And this just seems to be part of the human psyche. It's primal. It's hardwired into our DNA. Maybe it's one of those vestiges lodged in that little reptilian node of our brains from when we first began to emerge as a species, and people were fighting and scrabbling just to survive, and you needed to hold on to your food to make it to the next day. Now, knowing what is mine, knowing what is yours, is not always a bad thing, right? We can take pride for the right reasons in possessions. Think about the home that you've spent years building, or the car that you saved up and bought, the degree you earned after a lot of hard work, the garden that has been lovingly tended over the years. These things can be good. But there is a dark side to possessions, and there's a dark side to wanting things. And that's reflected in this morning's lesson from 1 Kings. Here we have Ahab sitting pretty as the king of Israel. You'd think he's got it all. He's living in the palace. He's got courtiers, great food, wonderful wine, beautiful clothes. But it's not enough, is it? When he should be spending his time thinking about international relations or how to grow the economy, he's instead looking out the window and thinking, "I want that vineyard. Only if I have that will I be happy and satisfied." So he contacts Naboth and offers him a deal. "I'll give you a better vineyard. And if you don't want that, I'll pay you." But Naboth says, "Sorry, I can't let go of my ancestral inheritance." And so Ahab goes back to the palace in a sulk. And there he is, pouting. What a pathetic picture he must have cut. He's the king. And there he is, just sitting all long-faced. And his wife wanders in. And we can just see Jezebel saying, "Man up. Get with the program. You're a king. If you want that vineyard, you should have it." Now, Jezebel isn't one to just sit around and mope. So she sets the machinery in motion. And Naboth is framed. And before we know it, he is indicted, convicted, executed, and his land expropriated. and now it's all Ahab's. He has everything he could want. And then he gets something he doesn't want, a visit from an enraged, infuriated Elijah, who comes to tell him that because of his actions, he is cursed. The reading in 1 Kings 21 carries on to tell us exactly what this curse is comprised of. And Ahab and Jezebel are both going to meet ugly ends. And Ahab's line is going to be cut off. Ahab responds by repenting. And while he gets to die a natural death, his family is still damned. The line is cut off brutally. His desires, his lusts, were his destruction. Now, this story is often used in preaching to talk about the limits of political power and how it should be exercised responsibly. And this is appropriate. But there's also a more personal lesson for us here. We have not one, but two of the Ten Commandments dealing with some of the issues that come up here. Thou shalt not steal, and to help us get to the point where we're not even stealing, thou shalt not covet. And of course, we also have thou shalt not kill, so we can make it three, all of which come into play here. Ahab coveted that vineyard and engaged in actions that were destructive to his neighbor and to his family and to himself. Now, when people think of this story, they hear the name Jezebel. They might recall, oh, yes, she is the sly, conniving one. She is one of the worst women in the Bible. She's evil. She has no constraints. Remember how Ahab, having his deal rejected, goes back and sulks? That's because he was operating within his culture. The reason Naboth would not sell that land to Ahab, nor trade it, wasn't because he'd invested his heart and soul in making it beautiful, nor was it because he didn't like Ahab and didn't want to do business with him, but because it was his ancestral inheritance. That was a concept much larger than it was the family homestead passed down from generation to generation, but it was what was known in Hebrew as the Nachalah. It was the portion given by God to each family when they came into the land. Everybody was supposed to have a place to live. Everybody was supposed to have something with which to support his and her family. Naboth could not let go of this. And Ahab recognized this. He didn't like it, and he pouted and he sulked, but he recognized it. But not Jezebel, because Jezebel was Phoenician. She was a foreigner. She didn't know the right way to do things. And so she broke all the rules. And so Jezebel is often painted as the villain in this story. But hold on here. What did Ahab do when presented with this vineyard? Did he say, I can't take this? What did you do? This is awful. I know you're my wife, but you just engaged in a conspiracy. You had someone murdered. You've got to go to prison. He didn't do that. And we can think about all those aristocrats and all those other political figures, those elders. They were complicit too. Why did they act? To curry favor with the king? With the queen? To be more powerful, more secure? Ahab and those elders had lost all sense of perspective. They went from focusing on what is mine to having yours become mine. And it's a trap that we can all too easily fall into, which is why we should focus on Naboth and the way he looked at things and hold on to that example. He knew that that family plot, that vineyard, ultimately wasn't his. It was God's. The land is the Lord's and everything in it and on it. The logical conclusion to that kind of thinking is that nothing is ours and everything is God's. Now, maybe that makes us feel poor for a moment, or bereft. But consider the reality of life. All of the things that we spend our time collecting and amassing and building and hoarding will someday pass from our control, whether through infirmity or bad luck or chicanery or ultimately and inescapably death. It will go. It will be gone. And we can worry about it and be caught up in that and fear for it. Or we can recognize, as Naboth did, that all is God's. All comes from God. All goes back to God, even our lives. And we can be freed from anxiety and focus on those things that are truly important, on leading the kind of lives God hopes for and wishes for us. There's another commandment that we should think of as we consider this story. Thou shalt have no other gods beside me, before me. In our consumer-driven culture, where we're often encouraged to judge ourselves by the size of our house or our car or stock portfolio, we create false gods that draw us away from the one true God, that draw us away from healthy living to futile living and to a way of being that is empty. As we consider this passage from 1 Kings today, we know that we do not need to pin a piece of paper to our chest declaring, I know what is mine. We have Jesus to remind us of that. We know that we have the assurance and the conviction that we have been made and named and claimed by the one who brings justice and mercy and righteousness and grace and hope and love to you and to me. Thanks be to God.